I'm Bob Barr. I'm a chairman of a company called Manchester Geomatics, which was born out of a research laboratory at the University of Manchester.
You work with GIS, Geographical Information Systems. Could you explain a little bit about what those systems are and what they allow us to do?
Well, a geographical information system, at its simplest, is any system that allows a computer to draw a map. But it does a bit more than that. It splits the map up into individual objects, so you might have houses or streets, and it attaches information to those streets. So it allows you to analyse or retrieve that information about the objects, as well as drawing a map of where they are.
One of the interesting things about mapping data in the UK is who owns it and the licenses around it. Did you get into that in some of the discussions? And if not, could you just kind of outline some of those issues in terms of licensing?
Yes, we did, because since the 1980s, there's been a real problem that our national mapping agency that holds the data that government's collected over 200 years was instructed to become self-funding. And the only way that it could become self-funding was by selling its data at ever higher prices. And in an information age, actually, the marginal cost of passing on data goes down and down and down almost to zero. And the only way that you can sell data is by putting a wall around that data and saying you can only retrieve that data if you pay for it. So there's been this licensing tension between data wanting to be cheap and free, but the commercial imperative set by government for the agency has forced them to create a pricing structure.
That's fascinating. Now, there's been a drive now to sort of open up some of that licensing. Where are we in terms of that licensing?
There was a very dramatic turnaround by government in November of last year when the Prime Minister, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, Professor Nigel Shadbolt and Martha Lane Fox, I think to everybody's amazement, announced that as part of the data.gov initiative, a large body of ordnance survey data would become open source and would become open and publicly available.
Now, with those licensing costs, how has that impacted companies like your own, which rely on data information?
It has, ironically, created a job for us for the last 10 years. We have, as a company, thrived on the fact that three sets of information, the post office data on addresses, local government data on addresses, and Ordnance Survey data on addresses, were largely separately maintained and separately licensed. And many organisations needed to understand the differences and the similarities between the three. So our company has spent a lot of time putting things right and trying to come up with something that was more complete and more definitive. Ideally, I'd like to be in the business of using that information rather than unravelling the problems that are with it.
Now, you talked about the Ordnance Survey data, but also there are alternative sets of data. One of them is OpenStreetMap. Now, what are the licensing terms of OpenStreetMap and how can people use that data?
OpenStreetMap is a bit problematical. It's currently under a collective commons style license, which is requires attribution. But there are concerns within the OpenStreetMap community as to the extent to which they want to see OpenStreetMap data used commercially, because they don't want to see the initiative subverted commercially. Steve Coast, who set up the OpenStreetMap initiative, is now working with a very large startup company that he started up to exploit OpenStreetMap. And that's created all sorts of contradictions. So you have people who want to license OpenStreetMap under something called Open Database License, others on the Creative Commons. The Creative Commons people say, don't mess about, just place the whole lot in the public domain. And this argument's been going round and round and round in circles, which means that OpenStreetMap's fallen into the same trap as many other data sets. It's not at all clear as to the circumstances when you can use it.
Now, in terms of this licensing tension, are there issues when you release something into the public domain? Obviously, with the Ordnance Survey data, as you said, in the 80s, they were kind of pushed into becoming self-funding. What are the costs and benefits of releasing that information in the public domain?
I think that the only thing that when you release data in the public domain is you no longer have any control over its use. You won't necessarily be credited with its use. It could be distorted in various ways. Could have value added to it, small quantities of value added, and be locked up again for commercial gain. So effectively, you lose all control over its provenance, over getting any reputational recognition for having created it or how it will be used in the future. And whilst the voluntary community that puts together OpenStreetMap is very willing to do that, they're not willing simply to do the legwork for free for a set of people to make a lot of money out of it.
So you've just come out of some discussion sessions in the morning, and John Granger of IBM sort of outlined some of the issues that you'd be wrestling with, and some of them were about the ethics and politics around information, which you've just talked about in terms of licensing. What were some of those discussions, and if you could just give us a sense of some of the tension points?
In terms of politics, I think the main tension was that the audience interpreted me as being a big state man wanting the government to sort out all the problems in terms of getting licenses right, what's in the public domain, and funding getting some sort of definitive version of some of this information. And that actually wasn't necessarily the case. I cited the domain naming system that makes the internet and the World Wide Web work. Now, that isn't driven by government, it's driven by a voluntary standards body and then by commercial registrars who all work to the same set of rules. So we know how to map and how to find our way around cyberspace. What I'm looking for is a similar solution for geographical space. The problem with geographical space is that a lot of the geographical commons, if you like, have already been enclosed behind various paywalls and pay fences. And one of the things that disappointed me slightly was that the audience seemed to feel that paywalls and pay fences and commercialisation was the best way forward, putting together the sets of information that, in my view, should be part of sort of the commonwealth of public information, that we should we accept sunlight, we accept air, we accept water, we should accept information or certain areas of information as simply being a public good.
These days, there are services, location-based services, and some people are revealing where they are, and this raises privacy concerns. Obviously, some of the collection of information to help us solve some of the sustainability problems, we need to know where people are and what they're doing, but that, again, raises privacy issues. Did you talk about that tension between what's public and what's private, and also the collection of all that information, being clear with people what you're collecting and how you're using it?
We did, and we had an interesting discussion with one of the major suppliers of geodemographic and credit information, who are a private sector body that whose entire business is collecting, aggregating, analysing, and reselling information about individuals. And I questioned why the commercial sector seems to be unconcerned about private companies being able to do that, but very concerned when the state does that. My own view is that whether it's the private sector or the state that's doing it, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. This information is going to be collected, but it should be collected in a transparent manner. So the fundamental principle, I don't think we really got to it in the discussion, should be that everybody's entitled to see any information that's held about them.
Were there any conclusions, or what were some of the conclusions that came out of the discussion this morning?
I think that at some extent after the discussion, the particular issue that I was dealing with is a minor irritant that at any point in time, 15% of people travelling around town say they're lost. One of the reasons why people say they're lost is that the information as to what streets are called, the nameplates on the streets themselves, the information on Google or on your sat-nav or in your map is not necessarily consistent. So those inconsistencies cause some of those errors. And it's difficult to say how much you would save in sustainability terms, how many millions of tons of carbon you'd save by improving that data. But my view and my conjecture is that you'd probably save a sufficiently large amount that the payback to society would be worthwhile. What was pointed out was that from a political point of view, this is seen as a minor irritant rather than a political driver. So no politician is going to make their reputation, and no private company is going to make their reputation. Actually, no government department is going to make their reputation by solving this problem. So it brought out that there are a series of cross-cutting, cross-sectoral problems, which are minor problems but nevertheless add up in a sustainability argument, that can't be solved because nobody owns them.